your heart.
Torah Way, North West London, Tuesday, Chof Vov Tammuz, the 6th of July, Harav Yitzchok Shochet Shlita, Redressing the Balance, the Art of Ahavas Yisrael.
The Gemara at the end of Maseches Sukkah tells the story about, the famous story about the Jewish woman Miriam Bas Bilga, who did something that resulted in the whole Beis Kohuna of Bilga not being allowed to do any further avodah in the Beis HaMikdosh on account of her action. What did she do? Says the Gemara, she hit the side of the Mizbeach with her sandal. And why does her whole family have to suffer as a result? Says the Gemara, because we have a principle, Oyla Rasha, Oyla Shcheinai. Like we have with Gabi Kairach, sitting next to and Shevet Levi, encamped next to Shevet Reuven, and that's why they got roped in together with Kairach. And there also Rashi says, Oyla Rasha, Oyla Shcheinai. In this context, Oyla Rasha, Oyla Shcheinai means, in other words, woe to the wicked, she herself, who's committing this terrible act of hitting the side of the Mizbeach. And Oyla Shcheinai, woe to the neighbor, meaning the rest of her family. But really in this context, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. By definition, if she could act in this sort of way, then that reflects something that, some vibe, some atmosphere, some sentiment that she would have picked up within her own family. But the Gemara doesn't stop there. Then the Gemara goes one step further and tells us that if that's the way it works in the negative, Oyla Rasha, Oyla Shcheinai, then how much more so does it work like that in the positive, Toiv L'Tzadik, Toiv L'Shcheinai. What's good for the righteous is good for the neighbor, because the power of goodness is infinitely greater. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe asks the following question. How is it that we derive such an important and fundamental principle, such a meaningful lesson, Toiv L'Tzadik, Toiv L'Shcheinai, from this otherwise very sad and sorry episode? It's a very significant, it's a very important principle. And in as much as Mechla Lava to Shemeya Hain, so yes, when you say Oyla Rasha, Oyla Shcheinai, therefore automatically you can derive a positive from a negative, still it's a fundamental teaching of Yiddishkeit. Why would we learn something so important from what is essentially a very tragic tale? Could have learned it from any number of other scenarios. Elamai, we have to conclude that if such an important lesson is to be derived from the story of this woman, then that must be a schus for her. She must be worthy, she must be deserving of it. Who was Miriam Bas Bilga? Why did she hit the Mizbeach? And if her actions were so bad that her whole family has to suffer because of her actions, then why is it that we also look to learn something positive from her story? So we know she lived in the time of the Greek invasion of the Beis HaMikdash. She renounced her faith. She gave up on her emunah. She gave up on her Yiddishkeit. She married a Greek officer. She turned on her Yiddishkeit, on her religion, and she turned on her people. And when the Greeks are storming the Beis HaMikdash, she goes in. She steps towards the Mizbeach. She takes off her sandal and she starts to beat it, crying out, "Lukus, lukus, wolf, wolf. Achol mamayim shel Yisrael, you eat the money of Klal Yisrael," meaning the money that they spend on karbonos. "But you're not there to answer them in their time of distress." So here we have a bigger question. I mean, she's being punished, and her family are being punished. Why? Because she hit the side of the Mizbeach with her sandal. That's our problem. It's a terrible avla. But surely it pales in significance to her intermarriage, to her giving up a chlal on her faith. She gave up on her people. She married the Greek. She joins with the very enemy who conquers, who goes and treads in and makes a mess of the entire Beis HaMikdash, puts a tray for animal upon the Mizbeach. But notwithstanding all of this, what's our issue with her? Why is she, or more precisely, her family being punished because she hit the side of the Mizbeach with a sandal? How do we explain this? So the Rabbi Sherba goes on to say, from here we learn a very, very powerful message. The Pasuk in Amos says, "Kirak eskam yodaiti mikolo amim," I know you, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Klal Yisrael, amongst all the other nations. "Al kein efkoid eskam aleichem esavayneseichem," that's why I will actually bring punishment upon you. I know you from amongst all the nations of the earth, and therefore I'm going to exact judgment for you, for your averis, for your sins. The Pasuk, Amos, is teaching us a very important lesson in the life of a Yid. It's explaining why we sometimes get punished for doing wrong. "Kirak eschem yodaiti mikobish b'chayis adama," because I know you because you are so beloved to me from all the other nations. That's precisely why I will hold you accountable. You see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu holds a Jew accountable for his averes precisely because he loves him or her. When you are indifferent to somebody, then you could not care less whether they do right or wrong. It's of no real concern or relevance to you whatsoever. But a parent is always going to be pained when a child does wrong. And it's precisely because you want the best for your child that sometimes you look to punish the child in the hope that that will certainly make them better. The parent punishes the child not out of just anger, but out of tough love. Not to hurt the child, but to make the child better. Only because the Ribbono Shel Olam loves his people does it bother him if they turn astray. So sometimes you'll look at a certain yid and you will think to yourself that he's cut off from his, you see from his behavior, you determine that he must be cut off from everything. Comes along the Torah and says no. Comes along Amos and says no. Chas v'shalom, cut off, not at all. What you see is only superficial. At the core, something else is going on. Because the truth is that afal pi shechoto Yisrael, who even though they're doing whatever they're doing wrong, they're still part of Klal Yisrael. They're still part above that unique nation about whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares. And precisely because he cares, that he cares about that individual, then he cares about every action of that individual. Comes along Miriam Bas Bilga, a Jewish girl. She gave up on her Yiddishkeit. She marries a non-Jew. She marries not the enemy. Treason of the highest order. You'd think we would be writing her off altogether. You'd think that the Jewish way of thinking is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu writes her off, no longer considers her. In other faiths, maybe that would likely be the case. Says the Gemara, notwithstanding everything else she did, it still matters to the Ribbono Shel Olam how she's choosing to conduct herself in the presence of the Mizbeach. Her every action matters. And that proves the power of the indestructible Yiddish neshama. How no matter how someone looks on the outside, even if they are so low, even if they are in the middle of the Aveira itself, the neshama still remains eminently attached to a source above. It's not surprising, therefore, that despite her tragic story, we can still learn such a positive principle, Tov lo tzadik, tov lo shchenai. It's precisely through her that we are taught this idea, in order to show us that no matter what happens on the exterior, no matter whatever else is going on the outside, the Yiddish neshama on the inside still remains absolutely good. It's only, like the Rambam writes, Yitzra Yonsei, his Yetzahara is forcing him, even to such a pitiful state, but to give up because of this, chas v'sholom. And if giving up is not an option, then obviously the only other alternative is to reach out and to make a difference and to realize that if you engage, then your action will succeed. Because bal yidach mimeno nidach, ultimately nobody, no Jew gets left behind. So the Gemara here is actually a certain tribute to Miriam Bas Bilga. Her story shows us that even when one becomes completely distant from Yiddishkeit, she gives up on her faith, she marries the enemy, she joins her husband walking side by side, treading into the base of Mikdash, daring to walk there, again, treason of the highest order. And what bothers her at that precise moment? Why isn't the Mizbeach protecting Klal Yisrael? Why isn't the Mizbeach protecting her people? Now here you see, what it means to be a Yiddish kid, a Jewish child. She marries the Greek, she treads into the base of Mikdash, they're making a mess of Yerushalayim of the base of Mikdash, and the Mizbeach therein. She accompanies him as his wife every step of the way. But ultimately, when she sees her fellow Jew suffering, she can't ignore the reality. She can ignore it on the external, superficial level, but her neshama cannot ignore it. She cries out, Lukos, Lukos, wolf, wolf, why aren't you there helping your people? You know why HaKadosh Baruch Hu still cares about her? Because you see clearly that she still cares as well in that all-defining moment. And why does the Gemara therefore relay this story? In order to convey a very powerful message that is applicable to all of us, and especially in these particular days. Because when you go out into the world, and you meet another Jew who might look or act like anything but, and when you see him and you ask him, and he doesn't even deny it, he'll openly admit he's not at all interested, he'll openly confess to his apostasy, etc., and you'll be taken aback, and you'll think to yourself, what connection do I have with him? I have to distance myself from him. Says the Gemara, this Jew can reveal the principle of Tov LaTzadik, Tov LaShchina. Good for the righteous and good for the neighbor. But that depends on you. Because if you choose to care about him or her, and you choose to engage, and you choose to have Dvarim HaYotzim Min HaLev, then your words will penetrate and make the necessary difference as well. He'll then become your neighbor, whereby your positive behavior in accordance with Torah and Mitzvahs will positively impact him, such that you'll both have good. Why do you have to concern yourself and make yourself worry about you becoming his neighbor? Why do you have to stop and say, I can't engage with him? Ayla Russia, Ayla Shchena. On the contrary, it's not that you have to become his neighbor. Make him your neighbor. If you see yourself as better, then make him your neighbor, whereby Tov LaTzadik and Tov LaShchena. Show him how to emulate you, set the example and show the way. The Torah in this week's Parsha, Parsha's Maaseh, recounts all the journeys and all the travels that took place in the Midbar, and it highlights some of the occurrences that transpired in different places. And within that it mentions the stop where Aaron HaKohen passes away at Har HaHar, and the very next Pasuk comes along and tells us that the Melech Canaan, the king of Canaan, came to wage war. It doesn't actually mention about Amalek in Parshas Maaseh, doesn't mention about other Mohammeds, but punct after it tells us that they came to Har HaHar and Aaron dies, and the next pasuk it says, V'yavim Melech HaKnani, V'yalochim B'Yisrael, the king of Canaan comes along to wage war against Klal Yisrael. Why is that being brought in? And what's the juxtaposition? So the Gemara in Sota tells us that we had special gifts on account of the three greats that were with us in the Midbar. We had the Be'er, the well of water, on account of Miriam. We had the Mon on account of Moshe Rabbeinu. We had the Anane HaKovod on account of Aaron HaKohen. But there's one distinct, the Gemara goes on to explain, etc., and the Mefarshim go on to explain the underlying significance of each of these special gifts as they relate to each one of these particular individuals. But specifically, why were the Anane HaKovod on account of Aaron? Because Aaron was somebody who personified Ohev Shalom V'Rodef Shalom. He loved peace. He pursued Achdus. Hillel enjoins us to be having a Talmid of Shal Aaron of Shalom Barad of Shalom. The Torah tells us that when Aaron passes away, the Yivkoi say, Kol Beis Yisrael. You know, right? The entire Klal Yisrael cried for him. Doesn't even say that by Moshe Rabbeinu. Why Kol Beis Yisrael? So Rashi immediately tells us, because Aaron was the ultimate peacemaker. Ben Ish Le'ishtai, between friends and so on, and supposed enemies, etc. So when he passes on, everybody feels the impact. Everybody feels the void. Everybody cries. Now we know that when there's Achdus, that is our ultimate protection. When there's unity in the ranks, then everything is good. And when Chas V'Shalom Fakert, when there's some kind of disparity and Machlokes, etc., then Chas V'Shalom, we find ourselves much more vulnerable. I remember years ago, I was leading a birthright group in Eretz Yisrael, and it was right during the onset of the Second Lebanon War. And so we were confined to the south, and I was in a taxi near Eilat. And the taxi driver says to me, Nasrallah, who has some mitzvah. Nasrallah, Yimach Shemai, the head of Hezbollah, he's doing a mitzvah. I said, what kind of mitzvah? He says he's creating unity amongst all of the Jewish people there in Israel against a common enemy. I mean, that's Nabuch what it takes. Haman HaRasha observes and says, Yeshnai Amachad Mefuzer Mefeira Beinu Amim. He observes the fact that Klal Yisrael Mefuzer Mefeira, there's division in the ranks. And that's why he sees them as eminently vulnerable. And that's why there is a threat that lingers. And only later, when Esther responds, her first port of call is, Kenaisis Kol HaYehudim. Gather everybody, bring the Achdus back together. You see, the Mon fell proportionate to the stature of every single individual. Chazal tell us, if you were more of a tzaddik, the man fell on your doorstep. If you were less so, you had to walk a bit further out to get the man, etc. Similarly, when it came to the water, each shevet had to use a certain stick, etc., to draw a canal in order to bring the water to their individual shevet. In each instance, there was a certain kind of disparity. But the Ananei HaKavod, on account of Aaron, they protected overhead, everybody collectively. There was no disparity, there was no differentiation, there was no divisiveness. Everyone, all 12 Shvatim, were united under the equal protection of the Ananei HaKavod. And that, therefore, was dafka in the merit of Aaron, who always sought out this unique quality amongst Klal Yisrael. So Rashi explains, when Aaron passes away, the Ananei HaKavod, the cloud is removed, the protection is seemingly no more, thus enabling the Melech of Canaan to think that now is a good time to launch an attack. But I suggest to you, the point is more than that. If Aaron was the advocate of this most compelling achdus amongst Klal Yisrael, he's the ultimate peacemaker, such that everybody felt the impact of his passing, V'yifkoesei Kol Beis Yisrael. So when he's no longer there, who's keeping the peace? Who's maintaining that level of achdus? Maybe it's there, but is it really there the same level as it was before? And so that generates a certain void. And that can engender a certain opportunity and vulnerability, enabling Canaan to feel that now the moment is ripe for attack. And that's always read this time of year, during the Dry Vochen. Our whole existence as a people, as Klal Yisrael, is a supernatural existence. In the words of Chazal, like a sheep, concerned like a sheep among 70 wolves. The Godel Haraya, great is the shepherd who looks over us and protects us. But what happens when the sheep turns around to the shepherd and says, thank you very much, I can take it from here? Well, in that case, then you're subject to the laws of Teva. You no longer need the Raya, you no longer need the shepherd. Then you're subject to the laws of nature. And by the laws of nature, our chances of survival are very different. And at that point, then it's up to us. Now the wolves are not scared to take the risk and to launch an attack, chas v'shalom. If you offend the father by telling him you don't like his children, you're effectively telling him, I've got this, and he'll tell you, okay, you're on your own. And that's, again, when we are at our most vulnerable. That's been our reality from time immemorial. When there is achdus, that's when there is stability, that's when there's strength, that's when there's fortitude, that's where that has to become our absolute commitment going forward. And consider this, how did Aaron keep the shalom? What was his secret? Chazal famously tell us, he'd go to Reuven and he'd say to him, I know you're quarreling with Shimon, but he really wants to make up. He'd go to Shimon, I know you're quarreling with Reuven, but he really wants to make up. He'd take the sting out of the argument, such when they meet up, there'd no longer be any of that ego in the way. The question is, but he never spoke to Reuven and he never spoke to Shimon. So he's not being truthful. Or at the best, he's being economical with the truth. So how do we explain that? And the answer is, Aaron may never have spoken to Reuven or Shimon, but at the very core, again, every Yid wants to do what is right. At the core, like Miriam, every single one of us, like brother or sister, doesn't want to be separated from the other. The schism, the feud, the machlokes, that's being fueled by the Yetzer Hara. As per the Gemara and Shabbos. We can all relate to that. You do something not nice to a friend, or you say something not nice to family or whatever, and later you apologize, I'm so sorry, I wasn't being myself yesterday. What does it mean you weren't being yourself? What we all know to be true, that there is a real self and there is an unreal self. The unreal self will act sometimes cruelly or foolishly or both. The real self would never do that sort of thing to hurt a loved one or anyone else for that matter. So it says the Rambam in Hilchos Gerushin, Kaifin Naisa Achi Emir Reitza Ani. We coerce the true essence out of him. There may be things masking over the core, but Aaron is merely exposing the truth that lies at the essence of every single Yid. In simple terms, you think you don't like that person, but deep down, of course you're hurting about it. Deep down, you really do. Aaron was merely exposing that truth. And finally, another story from the Gemara elsewhere. The Gemara in Tainus tells us the story, the famous story, very curious story, about Rabbi Elazar, some say Shimon ben Elazar, who was once traveling along when he passed a rather seemingly homely-looking individual. And looking at him, Rabbi Elazar said, Reka kama mechur oiso ish. Empty one, how ugly is this person? And the man, hearing this insult, turned to him and he said, Leifa emer lo'oman shosani. You don't like the way I look, go back to the one who made me. You don't like the product, take it up with the manufacturer. And Rabbi Elazar felt an immediate sense of remorse, followed him, begging mechila. What's happening in the story? Is it really conceivable that Rabbi Elazar would have been so superficial as to have actually made this sort of comment? I mean, could you imagine your Rav coming into shul one day and suddenly saying, Mr. Silverstein, there's no way for me to sell you this, but you don't look really good and you need to get a nose job. I mean, if you can imagine your Rav saying that, I don't want to know. But let's consider this in a different context, in a spiritual context. Imagine a Rav getting up and saying, how ugly is this person religiously? How devoid is this person of spiritual substance? How crass is this person who's disconnected from their Yiddishkeit? Maybe someone speaking like that, maybe not saying it, but by nuance and innuendo. The Gemara makes a deliberate point of telling us that Rabbi Elazar was coming, Mebeis Rabbi. V'somach simcha gedeilo v'haysa daitoi gasa olav m'pnei shalama teira harbe. He was feeling really good about himself because he just finished a geshmak hashir. Very curiously, Rashi steps in over here and tells us, Yesh Svarim Shekosu Behen. Some Svarim say that this was Eliyahu Zohar Latoif. V'neskavin lo'haychichai sheliyargi bodover. He was coming to teach him an important lesson. Tosfos also steps in and says exactly the same thing, that this was really Eliyahu HaNavi. What's the point over here? You know, that elated feeling when you finish and you enjoy a satisfying shir. You just finished learning a geshmak sugya. Maybe you were even machadish something in the base hamedrash and you feel good. Nothing wrong with that. It becomes a problem, however, when it's daita gasa, alav, when you become so full of yourself that there is no room for another. The key is in Rabbi Elazar's opening words. He says, "Reka, empty one." He's not reflecting on this man's external appearance. He himself was looking beneath the surface and he doesn't like what he saw. The man that stood before him was Reka, was empty, null, and void of any spirituality. How ugly is this man? Rabbi Elazar, on account of his own newly acquired spiritual contentment engendered from his own learning, is quick to condemn this lesser mortal. But the man retorts and says, Leifa emer lo'oman shosani, go back to the craftsman who formed me. By definition, like you, I too was created B'Tselem Elokim. I may not be right now on the same lofty status as you, but the same craftsman who formed you formed me as well. Like Miriam Bas Bilga, I too have a nefesh elokis contained within me as well. At the core, I too am good. So this man, or more precisely, Eliyahu HaNavi, is looking to teach Rabbi Elazar an important lesson that again is equally pertinent to every single one of us. It seems that he had something, as per the words of the Gemara, of a holier-than-thou mindset, a weakness not too uncommon today. Maybe he had an issue whereby he looked down upon those whom he saw or recognized may not be up to parity with his own spiritual disposition. So this man, or Eliyahu, is retorting with a fundamental Jewish principle. We have to l'oreacha kamecha. You don't know where he's been. You don't know the DNA makeup of his neshama and his background and his circumstances. And though at first glance a person might appear to be loathsome and despicable, as in the words of Sefer HaTanya, who can know their true greatness and excellence and their root and source in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Look beyond the supposed skin-deep ugliness and see the good and the brilliance beneath. Says Rav Tzadik HaKohen in his pre-tzadik on Pashas Kedoshim on the Pasuk V'lahavta Recha Kamecha, he quotes this Gemara, he quotes the story. And then he goes on and adds, he says, Ki be'emes nafshi is Yisrael tzadikim. V'ritzayneinu lasis ritzayncha rak hasar sheba'isam akev v'b'tshuva mesrapa haka. On the mitzvah of Avas Yisrael, he stresses that regardless of the enormity of the sin, v'ammeich kulam tzadikim, everybody wants to do the right thing. It's only the Sa'ar Sheva Issa, it's the Yetzirah, the untrue self that might actually lead a person astray. But with Tshuva, everyone can find their way back. So we don't get to write anybody up. And thus says the Gemara when introducing us in the first instance to that story. That a person should be soft, like a reed towards other people. In other words, or in the words of Avos Rav Nasum, Ma konezeh kol ruchos bois v'nei shvois, just like when it comes to a reed, all the winds can come and start pushing it this way and that way, and it blows back and forth in the wind. When the winds stop blowing, then the reed returns back to its original place. It's about being flexible like the reed. In other words, where you are able to reach out to the other person. But ultimately, of course, you're not compromising your principles when you're flexible towards others. You can be oimed b'mkaymoy, still stand firmly in your place, maintain your dignity, keep to your standards, even as you're bending to reach out to the other. Toiv latzadik, toiv l'shchena. And I suggest to you that the significance and the emphasis of both Rashi and Tosfos jumping in here to stress that this is really Eliyahu HaNavi is because it's precisely this mindset that keeps us stuck in Golos. Sinas Chinom enabled us Golos in the first instance, and therefore the antidote is clearly Avas Chinom, gratuitous love. Gratuitous Avas Chinom means loving someone even where there may seemingly be nothing to love about them. Because after all, they appear reka, empty, mechuar, ugly. But we love them just the same. That's when Eliyahu HaNavi will come and herald the Geulah. And I'll finish on a final point in regards to all of this. And that is simply the fact that this Shabbos is Rosh Chodesh Av. And Rebbe Yitzchak of Berditchev explained that the Shabbos following, Shabbos Chazon, is so called because the word Chazon actually means vision. And on that Shabbos, every soul captures a glimpse of the greater era of Mashiach which beckons. We may not see it literally, but our neshamas certainly see it. And by way of analogy, he famously explains about the king who makes a nice suit for his son, and the son makes a mess of it, and he makes another suit for his son, and he makes a mess of it, and then he makes a third suit for his son, but that he doesn't give him right away. That just every now and then he shows to his son, so that the son develops the yearning and the craving for being able to have that suit finally, and that's what will engender certainly the idea of bringing about that suit, bringing about that third base of Mikdash. You know, when Klal Yisrael were in Mitzrayim, there was so much disparity, there was so much schism. And then 49 days later, 50 days later, they're standing at Har Sinai, Vayichan Sham Yisrael. There was this compelling achdus. How did they transform suddenly from where they were at to where they became? And the answer is this. The giving of the Torah at Har Sinai is referred to as the cosmic marriage. Kadosh Baruch Hu is the Chassan and Knesset Yisrael is the Kala. The Torah is the Kiddushin. So the Gemara asks, Gemara in Ksuvos, Ketz Amaraktim Lifnei HaKala. So Beis Shammai says, Kala Kama Shehi. You perceive every Kala as she is. How do you dance in front of the Kala? In other words, how do you relate to the Kala? So Beis Shammai says, if she's beautiful, you tell her she's beautiful. And if not, not. Beis Hillel says, you see every bride is actually beautiful. So Beis Shammai then turns around to Beis Hillel and says, but what if she's not? Midvar Sheker Tirchok. Can't tell her something that isn't true. And then Beis Hillel responds and he says, somebody goes and buys something that's not good from the marketplace, you know, you're going to go tell him otherwise. What's the question? What's the answer? The answer is this. Hillel is basically telling Shammai, maybe Taka, you see, like Rabbi Elazar saw that man as not so pretty, as ugly. But the Chassan doesn't see her that way. Obviously, the Chassan is marrying her, so to him, she's still the most beautiful woman in the world. So for 5 minutes, take off your glasses and put on the Chassan's glasses. For 5 minutes, put aside your judgment and your perspective and see things from the Chassan's perspective. Put aside your personal judgments and see it through the eyes of another person. That's what happened at Har Sinai. For that one day only, Klal Yisrael, the Kala, with our multitude of complexities and diverse mindsets and a myriad of opinions, for that one day we put aside our differences and saw one another from the perspective of the Chassan, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, who peers into the inner recesses of our individual neshamais and recognizes the inherent beauty common to every single one of us. That's our challenge. See another Yid from the perspective of our supreme Chassan, who sees every single color as beautiful. And that's the way we have to perceive every individual color. appreciate, be sensitive to their struggles, to their challenges, create space for them, and then bring them closer. And as a real final point, Chazal asked the unusual question, what defines us as a Goy Kodesh, a holy nation? Where do we derive this principle? And Chazal answered, the Medrash says, from the Pasuk in Devarim, Umi ka'amcha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. Who is like your nation, Klal Yisrael, one nation in the land? And the obvious question on that was, what does that Pasuk have to do with a holy nation? The question was asked, what defines us as a Goy Kodesh? The answer is, again, by Matan Torah, Mamlechas Kainim, the Goy Kodesh. And yet, what's the point over here? Why are we bringing this Pasuk that has nothing to do with Kedusha at all? Yet in doing so, Chazal are communicating a paramount lesson. Yes, the Kodesh Baruch Hu declared us at Har Sinai as a Goy Kodesh, Mamlechas Kainim, a Goy Kodesh. But the question wasn't that. The question is, what defines us as Kodesh? What do we need to do to retain that title, to maintain that stature, to live up to that ideal? Umi ka'amcha Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. One nation. It's the oneness, the achdus that categorizes us and makes us Kodesh, and makes us actually holy. And we should talk about Zoycha, therefore, that Yahapku Yamam Elu, these days, should be turned around from negativity to positivity, from sadness to joy, and to the ultimate joy, Simchas Elam al Reisham, with the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu through our achdus, Mherav Yameinu. Amen.